This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Okay, welcome everyone to Annuity Straight Talk, the podcast. My name is Brian Anderson, and I am here with my esteemed colleague, Ashok Ramji of Top Planning in Kirkland, Washington.
Hello, Brian. Happy to be here.
At Forza Coffee in downtown Spokane, unfortunately, the Gonzaga Bulldogs did not pull off the national championship. But, I'm sure they'll pack the team next year and have another run at it.
Absolutely.
So what do you want to talk about today, Ashok? I guess we recently talked about some of the reasons why people don't buy annuities. And we're going to start this off maybe, I thought it'd be a good idea if we kind of both share our background and how we got into the annuity business. And it reminded me of a newsletter I wrote several weeks back where I told everyone, because a lot of people ask me, they say, well, how did you learn all this stuff? So I wrote the letter, How I Learned About Annuities, that details my entry into the business and how I was introduced to them early in my career.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. We're looking at a post from January 14th of this year on your website, annuitystraighttalk.com. Let's just take a whirl and kind of walk down this article and see where it takes us.
Right. And so when I thought about this, obviously, politics is a contentious issue, and my wife and I sit on two different sides of the aisle. I'll let you guess where I fall on that, but she doesn't like confrontation, so we don't talk about it a whole lot. She calls me a conspiracy theorist because I typically challenge the status quo in just about every area of my life. And when I explain to her that that's really the nature of who I am, and that's how my career has gone, I told her that it had nothing to do with me being a conspiracy theorist based on the last few years of politics or economics. This really has been the evolution of my thought process to become who I am today. And it brought me back to how I learned about annuities because of where I started in the business. And you come from kind of a different area than I do. I started out in insurance and you started out in the investment side of things.
Yes, I was at UCLA, not quite sure, having gone through the program in economics and business and administration. It wasn't a double major, but it was sort of a split major at UCLA. And I was one of those super seniors, right? I just didn't quite know at the end of the program where I wanted to land. I saw a listing at a job career board at UCLA, and it said the firm's no longer around, but it was Bear Stearns.
Oh, yeah.
And so at that time, they actually had an opening. So I went there and learned all about the stock market and working with clients with stocks, bonds. Then I ended up migrating over to what we call the buy side, the investment management space. So it's almost like what I want to clarify is we both have a both approach. We believe that there is a merit for insurance solutions. There is a merit for investment solutions, depending on a client's specific situation. But I came at it from one side and worked to the center. You came at it from another side and similarly worked to the center.
Right. And I think that's important for people to understand because a lot of the information and a lot of the opinions out there come from people that believe it's all or nothing on one side or the other. And that has been proven academically to not be the case. So it takes elements, especially in retirement, elements of insurance protection and elements of growth that may require risk.
I think that two things that we always have to think about when we're working with an advisor. Number one would be our bias, you know, and our bias is shaped by our version of truth. We experience things and it forms opinions, right? So that's how we start developing cognitive biases. There's another aspect that shapes our thinking, which is our business model.
Right.
So I feel like those two things, when you start talking with advisors, I hear this a lot. Someone will say, you know what, I've spoken with five different advisors and they give me five different ideas. And it's probably because each person at the end of the day is subjective and they're saying, this is what I think, but it's their own biases and maybe their compensation models that might be leaning towards a certain approach versus another.
And I think everybody's guilty of that to some extent. That's why I've taken the time to really outline my evolution of thought and talk about where I came from so that I can offer as much objective proof to the plans, the ideas that I create so that people can actually take ownership of that. And again, really, the idea is to empower the individual to make a confident decision.
So let's get back to here in your How I Learned About Annuities post. We talk a little bit about how you were in college, but you were talking with your uncle and you start realizing he's very successful.
Right. And we had, growing up as kids, I like to say we weren't rich, we weren't poor. My parents did a wonderful job of teaching us, you know, the right way to handle the world. We had everything we needed. And I love my parents to death, and I think they were excellent providers, but we were not wealthy. We didn't have a lot. And part of the reason, because my dad was a school administrator and we had six kids in my family, right? But my dad's little sister married a guy who was kind of one of my favorite family members because he was a very successful guy in business, did a lot of real estate. He was a petroleum distributor for a major oil company. And he owned gas stations and rental properties and all sorts of stuff. But he was really successful. And I thought, okay, well, I really want a little more out of life. Maybe I'll ask Uncle Gary, hey, how do I do what you do? I want to do that. And he was also a real quiet guy, kind of a private guy, a very, very hard worker. And he didn't really answer my question. And I thought, he probably is just not interested, right? But it was interesting. In college, I studied finance and did a little bit in economics as well. And I got my finance degree, but that was right after the dot-com bubble burst. And so when that was all falling apart, I was doing my final investments classes. I didn't feel like using my degree because I wasn't a very risk-on type person, and I didn't feel like I could recommend that route to people. Early in my career, the worst story I heard was a guy who had $2 million in his 401k, worked for a telecom company, and after the dot-com bubble burst, it was down to $80,000. And it would never come back because the companies just disappeared, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I graduated, my uncle came back to me and said, hey, you want to know how I do what I do? Perhaps you should meet my financial advisor. And his name was Andy, and he was an insurance-based planning guy. And so I went in for the interview and kind of learned, basically Andy talked to me and said, you can get started with this. If you learn to provide value to other people, then you'll become invaluable as well. And I recommend you jump in with this company, right? And the idea being that if I learned the elements of building a plan, building the protections into it, working hard, saving money, then I'd help other kids my age do that. And then in 20, 30 years, we'd be like Andy and my uncle. We'd be the very well-off financial advisor with all the, you know, high-end business clients, right? And so that's kind of where I started. And I enjoyed that over what the market would offer because it was insurance-based planning. So it was all very safe, guaranteed, methodical stuff.
Can I clarify? You were at school, you were leaning already to financial services, but you were starting to develop a concern over the way the market was acting.
Right.
0001, 0002. Then you talk with your uncle. What I noticed was, and it's in your article, was that you asked him, how am I going to be successful? He kind of gave you kind of an overall idea. He didn't answer your question specifically. He remembered your conversation, came back to you at a later time and said, you know, you asked me about this. Let me answer the question. Let me introduce you to Andy. And it really solidified that you were already concerned about the way the market was performing. Here was a way to potentially become financially well off yourself by solving people's problems using more of an insurance approach. Is that
absolutely
right?
Yeah. So in short, I learned, yes, there is another way to do this.
And that's, by the way, what I was wondering was when I was looking at the investment world, and I still work with investments today, the investments can go up, investments can go down. How do you have that more of a steady eddy approach? And that's where I feel like to the degree it works for the client, they can pick, you know, the individual can select A
right.
or B or A and B.
No, absolutely. And I think what's interesting is since I've always taken a contrary approach to this stuff and been safety first, there's always going to be people who disagree with that. And so I feel like I'm on the contrarian side of options and opportunities, and that doesn't bother me one bit. It doesn't matter to me if Ken Fisher agrees with my philosophy, but I try to provide all the objective proof, like you said, so you can have informed decisions, right?
And by the way, you were just talking a little bit about safety first. There are two different schools of thought in financial planning. One of them is safety first, which is more of the insurance-based approach. The other one is probability-based. And that's why, for example, one of the big things that you'll see in certain financial plans that are more heavy in the investment component is something called Monte Carlo simulations, right? So there are two different approaches. They both have a long history. When advisors are working with individuals to construct financial plans, the software will incorporate a probability-based approach or a safety-first approach. And sometimes I'm in the position of evaluating software where it does both. So that's why it's important clients understand, you know, where is my advisor coming from?
Right, right. And I've not been a big fan of Monte Carlo simulations because one thing we know, if you look at the probability-based approach, right, then the one thing you know is you'll get 5,000 dots on a graph, correct? And you're going to be one of those dots and you got time versus money and all that stuff, rate of return, factor into it, correct? The one thing you know that's interesting about, if you really think about it, is like, yeah, there's 5,000 dots, there's 5,000 hypothetical outcomes. But what actually happens is not going to be any one of those things. There's going to be some variation. It's going to be better or worse than what the probability suggests, right? And so that's where, if you look at people that are saving money as we grow and build wealth, it's fine. But once you're trying to protect it, live off of it, and pass it on to the next generation, then that approach needs to change. And that's where you can likely prove mathematically that the safety first approach is better. And not to mention the fact that a lot of people want that security and consistency.
And it's probably a good time to say that if you are considering the safety first approach, whether you decide to implement it or not, a good place to start is by calling 800-438-5121. You can go to Annuity Straight Talk. There's a green schedule a call button and just see if safety first has a place in your plan. You may ultimately decide you want to do more probability based, but it doesn't hurt to evaluate both approaches to make an informed decision.
Absolutely. And you can contact either Ashok or myself via that system because we've got his name up on the schedule button as well. So just so you know, it's easy to do and we're always here to help.
So back to this article, you have now graduated. You've talked with Andy. You started your career selling life insurance and setting up IRAs.
Yep. So I was going out and getting all the other kids my age and saying, you need to buy some whole life insurance. And you also need to start putting the money aside in an IRA. So, which is great because I still have some of those accounts and it's amazing. I know people that have several hundred thousand in them in their early 40s by just putting $300-$400 a month into it. Right. So that in that respect, it was rewarding, but it was also kind of monotonous, to be honest with you. You don't get a lot of assets under management by doing $200 a month, right? It takes a long time to build it up.
But it's a good starting place.
But that's where you learn what you need to learn so that you can start handling the bigger stuff. But that's where, you know, when annuities came into it, they weren't appropriate for, because obviously my sphere of influence was other people that were my age, correct? And that was one of the big concerns a lot of people had, and a lot of people say it now still is, well, it's different. I'm 42 years old now, but I started when I was 23. And anybody that was 45 or so didn't want to work with a 23-year-old because who knew that I had the staying power, right? There's a seriously high level of attrition in this business. I think it's a 90% dropout rate in the first 4 years, or at least those were the numbers when I started. I wouldn't assume it's any different now, right? So it took a while, and that's why I was doing some of that simple stuff. But then I learned a lot of the rules that go around it.
Yeah. And what I also think it's interesting is that when you were starting, you were working with people your age, you're in your early 20s. And when you think about what are people looking for at that stage, maybe they're starting up families, maybe they're just starting to get savings. So that's why something maybe like whole life insurance, cost of insurance is potentially pretty low. It's a nice runway. At some point later on, though, you meet someone who has a bigger financial capital situation.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's where they're saying, we want to protect this financial capital. So that's where you understood, wait a minute, this is where annuities start figuring in because
right.
We already have this financial capital that we may want to protect and not subject to market risk.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting is I was in the business for a few months and a family friend called me and said, hey, you work for an insurance company, right? I said, yeah. Well, my mom's second husband just passed away and I think she had $150,000. She doesn't want to buy a CD, but she's heard that maybe annuities would work. Do you sell annuities? And now I'd only heard of them. I knew the older guys in my office had sold them. And when I asked the general agent, he said, oh, no. Those are for the older guys. You don't deal with those. You can't do those right now, right? But it was still my client. So I brought in one of the older agents to say, hey, can you help me with this? So a few days later, we sit down and he had it all figured out. We put her into a 7-year fixed annuity paying 5.5% at the time. And it was quick. It was easy. She got what she needed. Business was done, right? But there was no information on annuities. And I say this all the time. I had to go to the library to start studying them. But I got a couple $1,000 for a commission out of that split with the other agent. And I thought, wow, I was living off of $2,000 a semester in college, right? And I thought, this is interesting. And if there's no information available out there, where am I to learn more of this stuff? So the next time one of those opportunities comes, I can handle it. Because that's the point of getting started. Others help you get going. And at some point you're off on your own, right? And so, which is interesting because now I'm back 18 years into it thinking, I need to start doing joint work and get guys like Ashok involved, right?
Well, why do you think that you talk with Andy, he says, this is the path, you're doing life insurance and IRAs, and you're told, don't really look at annuities. Don't you think that many advisors out there right now, kind of going back to biases and business models, annuities may be relegated to that corner?
Right. Well, and it was also that I was 23, 24 years old, and
people that you were in your sphere of influence just didn't have the financial capital.
No, they didn't have the capital to do it, and it wasn't necessarily appropriate either. Right. So we had right around 50 years old is the kind of the earliest, really, that annuities should be considered. And then it depends on risk tolerance and whatnot. But to be honest, I didn't have a whole lot of contacts in the 50-year-old plus category. And now most of my clients are mid-60s or so.
You can use an annuity, though, at a younger age if someone is risk averse.
Oh, absolutely. There's a way to do it. I'm not saying you can't, but it's not worthwhile for us to go out and advertise annuities to 35-year-olds.
Just to clarify, though, that there is a place if somebody feels like I want to have a backstop and I want to go up the mountain, the accumulation phase, more slowly and steadily.
Yes. I personally will begin buying. I have a couple now, but I'm not going to buy any more until I'm probably about 50 years old. So, but interesting, I think with that sale, as I became very intrigued. And so I started consuming as much information as I could get, right? And I realized there really was, people were at a loss to find solutions because, and again, I was really trying to figure it out as well. So when people say, well, I want to know what you know. All right, well, it's going to take you 18 years to get there. But I can show you what to avoid and probably compress that process a fair bit for you, right?
One of the designations that I have is the Certified Annuity Specialist through the Institute of Business and Finance. The material that comes is a big, fat compendium. It's like 6 different manuals, and it takes hours of study. They break it up into 3 different exams, but it's quite lengthy and you have to know different types of annuities, the ins and outs. So if you wanted to become an expert in annuities and truly understand the whole breadth and depth of them, it takes time.
It does, yes. And I won't say, I guess I can't say I know everything because I don't, but I've always been pretty good at, you know, if you give me a contract, I can discern what the purpose is and whether it's appropriate, right? It's interesting. There's some basic fundamentals that there's a value in each contract and the value needs to match your goals, right? I mean, it's as simple as that. And on the base of it, every insurance company's kind of working with the same things. So there can't be one that's so much better than the other if they don't have the same interest rates, right? So it's interesting to see, but if something looks really, really good in one area, it's going to have to come off of some other area. Like a high income payment, for instance, you're not going to see a big residual value. The money's not there to do it. The company's putting value on one benefit of the contract, and you have to make sure that the value in that contract goes to your benefit.
I always liken it to when you have a car manufacturer, they have a chassis, and they can say, okay, is this going to be a performance car or is this maybe going to be more of a fuel efficient car? For example, I drove over from Western Washington to Spokane in my Prius. It's very fuel efficient, but somebody could be driving a Porsche and just go a lot faster than me. but I value the fuel efficiency. So that's the design I wanted. And it's very similar with annuities. What do you want this contract to do? And in order for that insurance company to design it in such a way that it delivers certain attributes, they will have to give up other attributes because it's all off of the same. Ultimately, they start with the same chassis.
Absolutely.
And focus on certain features.
Correct. Correct. So it's, I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty interesting. If you learn the fundamental ways of working with them, then finding answers is pretty simple, in my opinion. It's just, I guess you have to know what to pay attention to and what not to pay attention to, right?
So now here in your timeline, you now have understood annuities, and then you were seeing really more the fixed annuities, which are,
right.
I would call them also the fixed interest annuities. These are your plain, what you see is what you get. Either it's going to be a declared rate for the first year and it's going to change every year thereafter, or we're going to guarantee the rate throughout the entire term. Something like what we might see, the bank version of it is a CD, which is guaranteed by the FDIC. This is clearly a different type of vehicle from the insurance company, but it's similar in terms of that interest rate.
Right. I think it's common to look at annuities and say, oh, that's so complicated. But put your money in, you get this fixed rate, guaranteed. It used to be that the rates would be adjustable. In the early 2000s, nobody wanted to buy the multi-year guarantee, which is a guarantee that the rate stays the same throughout the term, right? Because rates have been falling since 1989, and everybody's had this assumption that rates were going to rise. So if they took the adjustable rate, their rate would go up when rates rise. But the opposite happened, and those adjustable rates came down, subject to a guaranteed minimum. But I think, in my opinion, the multi-year guarantees really became popular around 2009, 2010, is when people started saying, all right, let's lock this in.
And just to underscore, when we're talking about annuities, the guarantees are based on the claims paying ability of underlying insurance company. Earlier, I was just mentioning that we think about it like a bank CD. It's just an easy way of thinking about it, but clearly bank CDs are guaranteed by the FDIC. Insurance annuities are not.
Right. And we can go into, that's certainly nothing to be concerned about because the insurance companies are very well capitalized, but we can do a separate show
exactly.
Specifically on that, where we can, you know, show people how to look at where the safety is.
Part two of your article.
Yeah, you want to move on to the next one, the evolution?
Yeah, because what I was noticing was that what's interesting is when you got started in this business, you're sort of seeing the way the world is starting to fall apart in, say, the early part of the turn of the century, right?
Yep.
And then you're ready to come out into the marketplace, 07, 08, 09. A lot of these products are changing at that time as well. And so now
yes.
You've been firmly in business now for 18 years. And I know I see a lot of older annuity contracts from, say, first part of the first decade, and those designs are no longer around today. Like, for example, there was something called, within the fixed index annuity realm, there was something called a two-tiered annuity. And one side got one thing, the other side got another, and it's complex. But the idea is that those two-tiered annuities, insofar as I know, are no longer today's design. So these insurance companies keep improving the design and making them more consumer-friendly, in my opinion.
Right.
And so you've really seen that evolution as you got out of school and were starting up your own business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, so when I started, I thought, hey, these fixed annuities are great. And I didn't sell a ton of them, but I'd sell a couple a year, find the right people. And it was kind of fun. It was easy, right? As hard as it is to say a 7% guarantee, though, nobody wanted to buy it. Because even after the dot-com bubble burst in the early 2000s, people still wanted to be in the market because it's like, why would you take a 7% guarantee? But we looking back now where you might get a 3% guarantee, it's like, wow, dang it, I really missed that. I have people that have bought those annuities 17, 18 years ago, they still have them because the guaranteed minimum on the contract is 4 to 4.5%. So they'll never get less than that. And their money's completely liquid. I thought I was going to resell annuities, but the rates weren't, and they had something better in a contract with the company. So they've kept them. I have never replaced annuity I previously sold,
which is huge. That's great.
Yeah. So, but what, like when I talk about my evolution of thought, what came out in 2005 or six, was the variable annuities with the guaranteed lifetime income riders, right? And I remember this is the contrarian in me. I looked at it and said, okay, most people kind of know how they work, but we're not going to spend too much time on that, but essentially the variable annuity with an income guarantee, the variable account will go up and down with the stock market, of course, but that guarantee means that the base that is used to calculate income will increase each year on a guaranteed basis, right? And so what you get is you get a guaranteed growth rate on the income that only counts if you trigger income one day. What I calculated is that you could take the fixed annuity, get a guaranteed rate, not pay fees, and then when you wanted to take income, you could convert that fixed annuity into a lifetime income stream and actually get more than what the variable annuities were guaranteeing. Now try being a 25-year-old with all these guys that have 30 years of experience and are all fired up about variable annuities. Try to be the kid that comes in and tells them, I think there's a better way. They didn't like it and they didn't listen to me.
And neither of us in our practice today work with variable annuities because you need a securities license to work with those.
Right.
But when we look at them, those designs, and we look at the fixed annuities, we can see that for certain clients, this particular design from the fixed annuity may be more appropriate.
Right. And it's not to say that that's the way you approach income in every scenario, but one thing that's important to people these days would be the certified financial planner designation or the fiduciary standard, which if someone adheres to the fiduciary standard means they have to do what's in your best interests. Okay. And so people really want that. And we'll probably do a show on this as well. I've taken issue with a lot of people that say they are fiduciaries, but don't seem to truly be looking out for someone's best interests. And I believe if you're truly going to be a fiduciary, then you have to look at all possible options.
Yes.
And so when I talk about a solution that's got more flexibility, more security, lower fees, you may not want to take that approach, but a fiduciary should show that to you because it's got a lot of potential in it. And a lot of people have found that that's a better way to approach things.
I completely agree. Not only do you need to show alternatives, but within the product, you can show alternatives. So let me clarify that. You can show alternate ways of approaching a problem in terms of strategy. And then when it comes to execution, there could be alternate approaches in that. So if you've decided, for example, on a fixed annuity for a portion of your retirement savings, that is a strategy. But let's see, hey, what are the alternates for that strategy in and of itself? But if we've decided on the fixed annuity, can we see two or three different alternatives? And for example, one of my clients who I'm working with, I have said, we do both. She's got investments. We also are looking at a portion of her retirement savings using a fixed annuity. And I said, for this type of surrender schedule, this period of time, here is what I'm suggesting, but here are also three or four other companies,
right,
that are in that space. Here's the database that shows everybody that's out there.
Right.
Because you and I, as practitioners, we know what's out there and we can compress timeframes for the individuals that we serve by saying, let's educate you and let's show you everything that's out there. And that way you can now make an informed decision.
Right. And like a quick example of that would be something to say, okay, if you're trying to maximize guaranteed income from a specific asset, there is, for your situation, and it's different for everyone, there is one contract that will pay higher than any other contract. And depending on who you are, what state you live in, what your age is, how long you want to defer it, whether it's a single or joint life contract, all these different variables, there is an objective answer to that, to saying this contract will. Now, it might be from a B+ company. And you might say, no, I got to have an A-rated company. I understand that. And typically, in most cases, I refuse to sell a B+ company. So then if you say, well, it's got to be an A+ company or better, you're going to get a different answer, right? Or there might be someone, not in the state of Washington, of course, or in some cases, California, where they say, well, I'll take a little bit less if I can add a long-term care benefit to it, right? Or an extra death benefit, or all this stuff. And then you look and say, well, what if I don't take the guarantee anyway, and I want to just protect the money and have free discretionary access to the funds at any given time? So that right there in any income situation presents a person with four to five different options that you really should look at to determine what is exactly the best option for you?
That is the best way of working with individuals. And I think this is a good time to say that if you like that approach where opportunities are laid out in front of you, and again, you feel this is something that merits consideration, go to the website, annuitystraighttalk.com.
Schedule a call button. Schedule a call at the top.
Yep. And there's a phone number too, right?
800-438-5121.
So now we're into part two of your article, and you're starting to realize now the different benefits of the fixed annuities, the indexed annuities, the variable annuities, and this is really driving your evolution.
Right. That is correct. And so, and I think it's just a matter of, again, trying to work as a fiduciary would and presenting options to everyone. And that goes back to why people don't buy annuities. A lot of people don't know what questions to ask, or you or I can look at something and say, okay, here's the best option, but how do they know that we're telling them the truth, right? And so in doing that, we've got to explain the differences in contracts and the different options of achieving a specific goal so that every time we add a layer to that explanation, it gives the individual much more confidence that they truly are getting the best solution.
I wanted to also bring home a point about, you know, we started off talking about biases, business models. People that are in the investment space may not feel, oh, I really want to work with annuities. You started off in this business really more focused on life insurance. And even within the insurance realm, there are people that look for life insurance, and then there are people who do annuities. And you'll even find that there's sort of a, there's like a wall between investments and insurance. And once you get into the insurance world, there's sometimes another wall between those two, even though they're very
well there's a wall for, like, from the consumer's perspective, but behind the scenes, the investment industry and insurance industry work closely together.
Yes.
So they're not as divided as you think they are.
Right. I was talking about more the advisor cognitive biases, where the advisor says, well, you know, you mentioned one advisor who prominently goes around saying, I hate annuities. And people have said, wait a minute, you become his annuity by paying those fees, right?
So, right.
But there's these cognitive biases. And so anyways, that was just the point I was thinking of.
Yes. Well, I don't think anybody's being intellectually honest to say they hate annuities. But I think if they say they hate annuities, it's because they don't understand them. That goes back up my mules last year. But we don't need to go there.
Well, I think we have covered the first two parts of your background, your evolution of thought. We also have part three of your article, which was talking about, should we just go there?
We can look at that real quick, but yeah. I want to say that maybe this is a topic of a different podcast, to be honest with you, because then we're talking about how to analyze the numbers really. And it's part of that where, you know, where I go back to say, oh, highest guaranteed income, then add in your credit rating, then maybe look at long-term care, then maybe not. It's really a demonstration as to how to look at those numbers the right way. So I kind of think it's, I mean.
Should we just do it for next time we get together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be a great thing to do together. So probably because we've got a schedule today and we'll stick with that. So.
Okay. Well, this has been Annuity Straight Talk. Once again, if you go to the website, annuitystraighttalk.com, if you're interested in learning more about how an annuity could fit into your plan, you want basically straight talk, just this may work for me, this may not work for me. The number to call, 800-438-5121. There's a schedule a call button. And one
thing I want to point out is that we understand the difficulties that can be presented by working remotely with people. We are advisors. We do sell product. We want to make sure they're in the right situation. If your request is to help us qualify a financial advisor in your area, we've got a lot of contacts around the country as well. So don't be afraid to reach out to us for just a fair assessment on it. And you can be honest with us. We'll be honest with you. And you say, I'd really like to do business in person and I live in Indiana. We've got a network of people where we can go do a little bit of research for you and make sure you get the right thing. Because our goal is to make sure we help you no matter what that means for us.
I love it. Well, Brian, why don't we wrap up here and we'll come back next time with part three and part four of your four-part series.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Ashok. And thank you everyone for tuning in. And we'll catch you next time. Have a great day.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only and does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with a qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the insurance company.
Ashok S. Ramji is an investment advisor representative of Insight Folios, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The firm only transacts business in states where it is notice filed or is excluded or exempted from notice filing requirements. Any fee-based financial planning and investment advisory services are offered through his association with Insight Folios, Inc. Top Planning LLC is not a registered investment advisor and is not another name under which Insight Folios provides services. Insurance products and services only are offered through Top Planning LLC. Insight Folios, Inc. and Top Planning LLC are not affiliated companies.